It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey there, Butte County. Welcome to the Chico News and Review show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. I'm Jason Cassidy, interim editor of the CNR and your host for this weekly news and arts show that is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Drunken Dumpling in Chico. First created as a food cart, Drunken Dumpling is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and drunkendumplingchico.com, where we love food, flavor, and our community. And by ID International. Businesses need new customers to continue to grow, and ID International can provide websites, logos, packaging, show displays, and social media strategies. Visit ID International online. On today's show, we're going to revisit the Bring Back the Arts segment on 1078 Gallery that we aired last week, but the bulk of the program will be devoted to breaking down this week's City Council doubleheader. But first, another special segment produced for the CNR by Imagining Community, the grassroots media and civic engagement project of local activist, environmentalist, journalist, and longtime KZFR programmer Guillermo Mash. On Monday, May 17th, the conditions were ideal for a prescribed burn in Upper Bidwell Park as part of the City of Chico's Vegetation Fuels Management Plan. Mash was on the scene for the burn, and his segment begins with the sound of the flames and a question posed to Chico Fire Department Captain Mike Watner.
How nice is it to be putting good fire on the ground instead of putting out bad fire?
We're really happy to be doing this to help the park be more healthy,
yeah,
with the landscape, and working in conjunction with PG&E and Chico State Ecological Preserve, mm-hmm, and the Parks Department. It's a really good opportunity.
I think it'll be a nice whole summer. People will be able to drive by and understand what a prescribed burn looks like, right? Right, Linda? Linda Herman, you're with the City Parks, right?
Yes.
Nice,
yes, absolutely.
Linda.
Yeah. So we just adopted our vegetation fuels management plan, and one of the tools in that plan, of course, is fire.
Uh-huh.
So we just excited to finally put that tool to work,
uh-huh,
and with a great collaboration with Chico Fire, like you said, the Ecological Reserve. We also have the VIPs out here helping us with volunteers. We have our PALS volunteers managing the trails, so to make sure that nobody, you know, is going to enter the burn, mm-hmm, area. It's just a really great collaborative effort.
How many acres is this, and what is the overall plan?
This is about 100 acres, mm-hmm, and this is one of several. We have 6,400 acres that we manage,
mm-hmm,
going from Bibble Park, of course, up to small little preserves that,
right,
you see around town. This burn was one of the key projects in the plan, and one of several. So right now, this is the one that we're looking at for now, but we're looking to hopefully do this for 3 years, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you might see it again next year and the following year, because,
mm-hmm,
it takes a good 3 years for star thistle to be eradicated as,
mm-hmm,
well. And then you'll see other areas, too, possibly maybe in the south side of Upper Park. We're doing some fuel reduction right now with 10 Mile House Road with the CCC.
Oh, okay.
That's not a burn, but that's elevating and thinning, mm-hmm, and doing shaded fuel breaks. So we're excited. That's another project that was in the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're real happy to get almost two of our key projects done within almost a month when the plan was adopted.
My name is Mitch Bamford. I'm the field coordinator for the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve. And one of the main ecological objectives, besides fuel reduction and anchor points for possible wildfires this summer, is there's a lot of invasives in this unit, particularly invasive annual grasses, Medusa head being one of the more noxious ones here, and it's pretty common in this unit. And this time of year is when Medusa head is just starting to set seeds, so its seeds are becoming ripe, but it also holds the seeds in the
mm-hmm,
grass for quite a while. So if you burn it right now, you have pretty good effect at killing those seeds and preventing it from producing the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Are we looking? Are we done?
Sir, all tied in.
Thank you for being out here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
To hear and see more from MASH, search Imagining Community on Spotify or YouTube. This week, in response to the Marathon City Council meeting that took place on Tuesday, May 18th, we are featuring an appropriately long interview with CNR contributing editor Evan Tuchinski. He was in chambers for the afternoon budget session as well as the regular council meeting that same evening, and he joins us now. Hey, Evan, how's it going?
Finally caught up on my sleep.
Oh, good. Yeah, gosh, that's a long, long day. I really appreciate and thank you for doing that.
Yeah, glad to be here now. Yeah, it was the annual budget workshop / city council meeting.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe they combine it like that. That seems that's asking a lot.
I think that it's due to COVID. It's been a while since I've covered one of these things, but now they're trying to consolidate and only have two meetings a month and really cover essential city business. So I think that's why we had the afternoon session and then a full evening session. They really are trying to do agenda management to not have, again, they typically do have two meetings a month, but they really are trying to streamline and have really essential business only things that are critical to city operations. They still do have city council member requests, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit, I think, because that intersected with homelessness.
Sure, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So those do come up as well, but they really have made a concerted effort to really focus on things that are vital to running the city.
I wonder if after June 15th, when we quote unquote open up, you know, more fully, if they'll go back to doing it the way they used to, or if this is the new normal.
I guess we'll find out, but even with the new normal, it seems like there's plenty to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the budget thing first. I think that the average Chicoan doesn't follow the way these budget meetings work. What's it look like when they come there? What's the presentation like?
Basically, each department presents what it does, what its budget is, and what its budget request is. So if they're asking for new things or new staff, they explain to the city council why. And it's kind of a little sales pitchy also, because again, they want to be able to justify why they're asking for these things. So it's basically a comprehensive presentation. The city manager starts it and ends it. The city does do it as a full package. Okay. But still, I have a feeling that for each department, there is a little bit of, hey, we want to show how valuable we are.
Sure.
So when those decisions come at the final approval meeting, that they're kept in mind. Technically, the council can make recommendations at this meeting. They did pass a resolution to authorize moving forward with this basic budget plan with a few exceptions, a few modifications. So technically, if the council didn't see something that they liked in one of the parts of the presentation or even the whole presentation, they could have directed city staff to redo the budget. They just chose not to, except for a few very micro things and one particularly interesting micro thing that just caught people's attention.
Yeah. What was that?
It was about water bottles at meetings. There was a policy in place to not use single-use, single-serving water bottles.
Okay.
So they've, at city meetings, used carafes and cups. Caught Mayor Coolidge's attention. And so Andrew Coolidge asked the city staff about this. He determined that it uses an inordinate amount of city staff time compared to buying single-use water bottles and putting them out for people to use or not use. And Sean Morgan, former mayor, current city councilman, agreed with him. And they put forth a motion, and on a 4-3 vote, 4-3, with Councilwoman Topeka Tandon joining the two liberal council people, Scott Huber and Alex Brown,
In opposition.
Yeah. Passed this. So now at city council meetings and other city meetings, they will use single-use bottles. So they were discussing a budget that, if you include the capital projects, is $143 million. This was an item of discussion. So it was interesting that, again, they can review anything in the budget. It is technically proper to look over anything in the budget. This became an item that was discussed and actually changed in the budget. That was almost the only thing of significance that was changed. Again, other things were just very minor policies that city staff had asked them to look at. Again, things that don't particularly change the things that citizens would be concerned about.
Sure.
This would concern citizens who just have an ire. This would concern citizens who have an environmental bent.
Sure. And it does, I mean, in all seriousness, it does beg the question. It's like, okay, fine, too much staff time with cups and crafts and whatever. But what if they just required city council members to bring their own reusable water container with water in it and they could refill it at their leisure?
Exactly. That's a potential solution right there. But that wasn't one that was brought up at the meeting. And again, I don't know that necessarily everybody thought about it because it came up spontaneously.
Sure.
And again, city council can legislate on the fly. They can bring things up at their own discretion. Because of the Brown Act, that Mayor Coolidge wasn't able to send this out to everybody to talk about before. But that is one of the side effects of transparent governance.
Sure.
Is that these things do get brought up for consideration in real time.
Of course, yeah.
And whether it's something as small as water bottles or as large as homelessness funding, those things get vetted the same way.
And this, they had, speaking of the this being presented as a, as an overarching presentation, there was a, they had a theme for the thing?
Yes, they riffed off the old $6 million man TV show, and they called it the $8 million man because the city had a budget deficit of $8 million in 2013, and now they've got a over $20 million budget surplus.
Okay.
So they broke down each department and created an analogy for that department within the structure of the human body, as if the bionic bionic woman was being constructed.
Better, yeah. Stronger, faster.
Better, stronger, faster. And then one department is the eye, and one department's the ear and the legs. So I guess it might have made it more entertaining than if it was just a droll budget presentation, but you kind of had to deal with the analogy being stretched and the bionic sound effects throughout the presentation and little clips from the show.
Oh, really? So, like, bop, 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 bop.
Oh, yeah. Bop, 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 bop.
Nice.
Yeah, it happened periodically. And again, it was great for me. I grew up in the 70s, so I got to, dating myself, but I got to see little flashbacks of my childhood pop up on the screen. But anyway, that was kind of the cohesive theme that they presented.
So for in terms of the things that they how they allocated funds, was there anything of note that got bumped up? Did we increase a lot in one area or decrease a lot in another area?
There didn't seem to be a lot that was noticeable in terms of decreases, though they did decrease expenditures. There's going to be some increased staffing in a few departments of note. Public Works in particular and Community Development is restructuring, and that they've requested to have a few more staff.
Okay.
That isn't funded as much from the general fund as it is from capital projects and development fees. And Public Works also has some funding that comes from capital projects also. So that's another department that isn't strictly general fund funded. One of the things that Sean Morgan asked for was a kind of a reconciliation, if you will, of all of these different adds and subtracts in staffing, because that wasn't presented. They didn't say our net is gaining 5 positions. That wasn't really presented. So when the council meets on June 3rd, Mark Oram, the city manager, will make that part of the presentation per the request of the council.
And as long as there's no major disagreements or anything, then that's when the city budget will be officially approved?
Correct. That's when the official approval happens. This was just a resolution to staff letting them know that in principle, the presentation that they made matches with the priorities of the council.
And if anybody wants to find out for themselves what's in the budget, they can go to the city website and click on the link, and there's the whole proposed budget is there to look at.
Yes, it's attached to the city council agenda from the meeting, and you click to that particular item, and then you can click to the staff report and read all the pages of it. So they have made it a little bit easier to read. In fact, they were touting that they won a statewide award for their budget presentation.
Oh, interesting.
So in the past, it was a lot more odious to read. So you this time can read the report and see the tables, a bit more transparent in that regard. But it still is a bit of a slog.
You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR, 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. If you're just joining us, we are in the middle of talking to CNR contributing editor Evan Tuchinski about the two city council meetings held this week. Part one was about the city's proposed budget, and part two was a regular meeting highlighted by a familiar local subject, homelessness.
Okay, so for the Tuesday meeting, that was part one. That ended what time?
That ended at about 5:15. They did take one other little item that was on the budget for that and ended about 5:15, and then they reconvened at 6.
6 for the city council meeting proper. And as usual, there was a lot of things on the agenda, but a couple things rose to the top. Specifically, we'll talk about both of these things, but the first, federal funding, there's some money that they had to spend. Can you explain what that was about?
They got some funding from the Federal Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, that was tied to coronavirus relief.
Okay.
And it was about $866,000 net, and they had to decide what they were going to do with this money. They'd already allocated $127,000 of it. Councilmember Cammie Denley had requested that this come before the council to review. And so the staff came and brought a proposal for a half dozen different uses for this money, different service providers that this could go to.
Sure.
When the council reviewed it, they decided to devote all of it to homelessness.
Okay.
The question was how they were going to do so. The motion that ended up prevailing devoted about $283,000 of it to CHAT, the Chico Housing Action Team.
And that's for unhoused individuals for emergency sheltering?
Yes, though actually that's devoted to families. That one is a specific program for families. And that program, interestingly, has been getting grant funding through the grant that's made possible by the shelter declaration that they discuss later, which we'll get into. But that'll allow this program to continue for another 18 months.
And then what was the balance of the money?
The balance of the money is going to go to exploring sheltering options with outreach included. That was something that was emphasized by the council members who supported this. It ended up being supported by all the council members, but there was a real push to include outreach to homeless individuals, encouraging them to seek services. And so there was actually a motion made by Andrew Coolidge, the mayor, to dedicate all the money to this general sheltering pursuit. But it didn't get a second. There was such near unanimous support, ultimately unanimous support, for CHAT's program that they wanted to make sure to include CHAT. So there's roughly going to be $500,000 going towards exploring temporary sheltering solutions, including outreach. And that'll come forward to the council to vet exactly which option they decide to go for, whatever staff presents them. But outreach was a key factor, kind of a key proviso for that $500,000.
So the next step then, like you say, is staff will come back with recommendations and the council will choose from them.
Correct.
And then you alluded to the fact that the shelter crisis declaration was discussed as well. The Shelter Crisis Declaration, which is up in June. Can you give a little background on it and then what was discussed at this meeting?
Sure. So Councilmember Alex Brown had requested this discussion because back in April, at the April 6th meeting, there was a motion that was passed to rescind the Shelter Crisis Declaration. Back in October 2018, right before the campfire, coincidentally, the city council passed a declaration of a shelter crisis, and that opened the city up to receive funding for service providers for grants that are exclusively for communities with shelter crises. Basically, they can then get funding from the continuum of care for Butte County funneled to them. And also relaxes certain regulations such as zoning ordinances to allow the construction of temporary shelters or use of property for things like the FEMA housing that's on Hagen Lane. Sure. At that April 6th meeting, council members, even though it wasn't on the agenda, rescinded that declaration. Well, because it wasn't on the agenda, it didn't technically count. But that still got the attention of the county and others saying, well, if your shelter declaration is rescinded, you're no longer eligible for these grants. These are the implications of that action. So Councilmember Brown brought forward a discussion to discuss those implications and ask that a rescission not happen. And she actually made a motion to extend the shelter crisis declaration for 2 more years.
Well, no, that's based on the fact that things haven't, the circumstances are basically the same as they were back in 2018.
Yes, we still are, basically, whether they're the same or worse even,
exactly.
We're still in a shelter crisis. So that hasn't abated. That triggered a discussion on the council about whether we, in fact, are in a shelter crisis and what the effects actually would be.
For rescinding it. Yeah.
Councilmember Brown had shared emails from the county discussing the implications of rescinding it, but Mayor Coolidge wanted to actually have city staff provide that information.
Okay.
And again, there was discussion about the number of shelter beds that are available. That's been an item of debate. There's been citations of number of shelter beds that were available as of the point in time survey, but the point in time survey is a snapshot in time and doesn't mean those beds are always available. So again, the accounting of shelter beds versus the number of people who need housing has been a back and forth debate. So bottom line is there was a substitute motion made to have a formal report from the city staff first, and not have any mention at all of extending or rescinding the shelter declaration. And because the substitute motion supersedes a motion that happened before, that's what got voted on, and that's what passed.
Okay.
So even though the expiration is June 30th, for the declaration, it's going to be at least until the next meeting, or unless Mayor Coolidge calls a special meeting, until those facts come forward. So Councilmember Brown was very concerned because of that deadline, but Mayor Coolidge told me, which we mentioned in the paper, that he's not concerned about the deadline just because of that capability of calling a special meeting.
So it's tight, the deadline's tight, but there's still time. If the staff comes back with information that council agrees constitutes enough reason to continue the shelter crisis declaration, that they can still extend it at this point.
Yes, they do need like a total of 30 days, you know, first reading, second reading of ordinances.
Okay.
So there, it's not an infinite amount of time. It is a tight window. But again, according to Mayor Coolidge, there is still time to do it, even with this extra level. There is an amendment to the motion made by Councilmember Brown to consolidate the report into the extension. But again, for technical reasons, that wasn't able to be voted on unless that substitute motion failed. Again, parliamentary procedures.
Oh, my goodness.
Sometimes these meetings, you get these parliamentary rulings that have to be made because of, rules of order and
sure.
Those types of things. That's what happened at this meeting. It ended up being a little bit of legislative poker.
All right. Well, it sounds like there's more on this we're going to hear soon, hopefully soon enough so that people can get the help that they need.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Evan.
Absolutely.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. Next up, the CNR's new weekly series, Bring Back the Arts, where yours truly interviews the leaders of local arts and music venues about their pandemic recovery efforts. Last week, I spoke with Mark Edson, executive director of the Chico Theater Company, and this week the spotlight is on the 1078 Gallery, one of Chico's longest-running arts organizations that celebrates its 40th anniversary this year. The gallery has experienced plenty of upheaval, even before the pandemic. Born at 1078 Humboldt Avenue, the gallery has moved three times, but has nonetheless cultivated a reputation as one of the hubs of local arts for its daring exhibitions of contemporary and experimental art in every medium by both local and visiting artists. The 1078 recently opened In Decline, a magical installation of shadow and music boxes by Zach Elstein. It's the first show since the pandemic shut down the gallery for which the 1078 was able to throw an actual opening reception party. Socially distanced, of course. And it was among the recycled wood and spooky lights and sounds of the exhibit where I met gallery board members Sarah Pape and Matthew Hooten to talk about this past year and what's to come now that there's a little light at the end of the tunnel.
When the pandemic started and the realization hit that this was going to be a prolonged period of time that you have to be closed, like, what was that conversation like?
Well, I think we had to think about how could we turn the gallery inside out in a way so that it still invited a public of sorts, but we couldn't do the things that we would normally do, which I think actually kind of creates an interesting prompt to have to think about, well then, if what we do is outside, what would that look like? So that's, we had already had ideas around the mural project. So the mural went up, Equilateral had, you know, coffee has regular hours that they hold in our parking lot.
That's right, yeah.
And it kind of started to become this interesting hub where the social distancing and the, you know, open air was already kind of built into it. Over time now, we have Sherry Scott in the back who's opening her own nursery.
Oh, Grub.
Grub. Oh, nice. And so in a weird way, it invited a bunch of collaborations between other Chico organizations or Chico businesses that were looking to also not have to house an entire, you know, monthly rent. And sure, for us, it helps us get through our monthly rent, which is by and large the biggest challenge for the gallery always, whether there's that a pandemic overhead,
yeah. How was the gallery, you just spoke about rent earlier, how was the gallery able to survive throughout all this?
I mean, through the kindness and generosity of our members. Yeah. We have a pretty robust rent club, people who donate a chunk of money every month to help keep the gallery going. You know, it's been a struggle, especially at the beginning. I think we really had to think about, can we do this?
Sure.
Can we make this happen? And not that the gallery hasn't asked that question over the many decades of its life.
Are you optimistic about the future of the gallery?
I'm super optimistic. Yeah, big time.
I think it's forcing us to not only go put our insides out, but bring the insides in. And so I think we're reformed based on what's happened during the pandemic. And I'm assuming lots of artists out there have been making art in response to this very particular human experience we've all been through. So I'm really looking forward also to seeing all of those manifestations.
Sure. You know,
and Zach's show right now is just kind of a perfect entry point back into showing art in a physical space.
The current 1078 exhibit, In Decline, will be on display through the month of May, and there will be a closing reception Saturday, May 29th, 1 to 4 p.m. For information on how to support the gallery through donations, membership, volunteering, or joining the 1078 Rent Club, visit 1078gallery.org. That's 1078gallery.org. All right, that's our show. Thank you for tuning in to the Chico News and Review. Thank you, KZFR 90.1 FM, for hosting us each Thursday at 5 p.m. And as always, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes this show. Take care.